Hey, friendos, welcome to The Road to Nowhere, a Marvel Champions LCG podcast. We focus on recapping Solo Champions League, but if you enjoy breaking down the finer details of a Marvel Champions matchup, then we have something for you. I'm your host, Joss Aru, and with us this week is our returning guest host, Jarrett. Jarrett, how are you?
I am doing very well. It's a day off for me here in New Zealand, so I'm excited to spend a little bit of time talking about the Marvel Champions Solo League with you.
Yeah, it's early morning for you.
Yeah, it's almost 8 a.m. now, so it's not too bad, but I normally get up at 7 a.m. for work, so.
Right. Well, appreciate, I'm a really early riser, so it's kind of, there's no time that's actually too early in practical purposes, but I very much appreciate you getting up and rolling to join us today. So, well, you know, before we started, we were just starting to talk about some of the new Marvel Champions content that's coming up, and I don't know, what do you think of the new things that have been shown so far?
Yeah, I was probably a bit surprised by the box, like the villains that we're getting and the heroes. It was, I thought, like, when they said X-Men, they'd stay kind of like, because there's a lot of X-Men, they'd stay more focused on X-Men, right, than shifting to X-Force, but I can kind of see what they're doing with the story, and I'm very excited by Domino. She looks like a character that I will really enjoy diving into. I'm less excited about the hero schemes because I've seen that mechanic in other games and it's never quite sticks the landing. But yeah, I guess we'll see. It's a fine idea, but none of them look like you put them out, you don't really get a punishment effect, so you only get like a positive effect when you complete them. And mm-hmm. Cable's kind of core one looks pretty insane in terms of powering him up quite quickly. So I think he'll be a very strong character. But yeah, Domino is the type of character that I think I like, that all of that technical weird stuff which you can do for deck building and then playing the game when it combos together. So the characters like Nebula, you know, I love Nebula, and Black Widow, even Cyclops, they have these sort of crazy little technical things going on which work very differently to other characters and are really fun to build for and play. With Domino, the other thing I'm super excited about is the posse. That looks really great. Fun. Like just a cool group of female characters together. So I'm definitely going to be diving into her when we get that set. Yeah, how about you? What do you think of what we're seeing?
Well, you know, I'm glad. Let's start with the posse because I thought that was a really neat thing to do. So the specifics, and even if we don't actually see any other heroes from the posse is a group of gray allies. And I actually forget exactly what the hooks are for how they all fit together mechanically. But it was basically a way of extending a hero pack without having more hero cards. So even if it was only ever specific to Domino, it was a bunch of things that you at this point would only ever use with Domino, but it kind of provides that extra thing, so you don't always have to have that in the hero pack. So I thought that was a really neat new design space where you could almost have little 4 to 5 card mini sets for different heroes that only were ever used with those heroes.
Yeah, so I think that there's two posse characters in her set, so she actually gets two allies, and there's one gray ally, which right. works with her discard mechanic. I think that's what it is. I would have to look it up again. And then there's the card which you play if you've got at least three posse members in play, and she's one, and Domino is one of them, which readies them all and heals them all, or something ridiculous like that. Like it's a 3-cost card that just kind of works with that mechanic. So it's sort of like Avengers Assemble, but has the healing factor built in, and feels like it will be easy and fun to play, and you can really like key off the different effects of the posse characters.
Right.
They just look like it looks like a fun little subgroup to play within Domino. I guess Champions have some similar sort of things where, like, because Champions is small, you can kind of like you could build a deck which has like the Go for Champions and a few Champions characters, and it has a similar feel. But you could do that with multiple heroes, whereas here you might only ever do it with Domino. But it's kind of a cool little niche thing for her, and it's nice when characters have that, even if some of it is built from extra cards, like gray cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked
Yeah.
fun.
Yeah, I agree. It looks Yeah, I'm just looking at the posse card. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Probably a better way of doing the team up, because it feels like
Right.
it feels like a team up card, but more accessible. Whereas the team up cards, you need to either be playing with the other hero in a multiplayer game, or kind of like leave your ally out and make sure they stay out to really get the benefit of the team up cards. I don't tend to use them a lot, but like I have played, say, my daughter and I played Nebula and Gamora together, and we had the team up card. It's great because it's just like free cards. It's an easy thing to put in, and it's quite fun. But then some of the other ones, like the I can't remember the name of the card, Psychic Rapport, maybe the Cyclops and Jean Grey one. I was playing two player, like two-handed solo, and I didn't find that card super useful for when you're playing with the two heroes together, because it readies you, and it's only useful to ready one of them usually.
Yep.
The other one doesn't get the benefit because they've already had their activation, unless they defended, which neither of those characters defend. So, yeah, some of the team up cards, they feel a little clunkier than they probably could be. But yeah, the posse feels like it's going in the same sort of direction. It's a team up card for Domino, but it's working with her kind of group of people that she hangs out with.
Yeah, I think it's a cool space. It'd be I will be curious if they're going to, ever go back, say there's more Avengers characters that come out later and they go back and have some of these things that link more closely to some of the characters that are, maybe just unique to those characters but don't have to actually go in. I think that'll be a neat design space if they follow it. I was also thinking about the player side schemes. I think one of the things I often find a little bit challenging with Marvel Champions is it is so event driven. There's not a lot of permanence that, in a way, that could have some of the effects that you want to have. So I look at the player side schemes as being another way of having something that's in play that you can trigger when you want to trigger it, where in this case, triggering it is actually clearing it.
I guess it serves a similar purpose to, and it's not just Justice, but Justice has a lot of, not a lot, but it has a few cards that you can put on a side scheme, and when the side scheme clears, they trigger. But generally, you want to get rid of side schemes as fast as possible, so they, even though they're permanent, they, until you trigger them, they're not really that permanent. You want to put them on and trigger them pretty quickly. And the other aspects don't have anything like that.
Yeah.
Preparations is probably the other thing, but even a preparation is triggered when the villain does something more so than when you do something. I mean, they might work really well here because it is a pretty simple like design space, and the way they've added them is simple. But and I guess that makes sense that you, if you don't want to trigger them straight away, that they don't have punishment effects for
That's
you.
right.
They're just like, yeah.
And then there's synergies with, as you said, cards that you can attach to side schemes or thing benefits that you get by clearing side schemes and some other things like that. So I think it's a neat other space. I basically I'm all for anything that introduces more permanence in the game because I think the combo enabling ends up getting more interesting, right? The combos that require a bunch of events at the same time is just are not practical.
I mean, we can talk about that a little bit later when we talk about some of the decks that people have played, but I'm not sure I agree.
Fair enough. It's more of a broad design, sorry, player observation, right? That when I'm playing, getting some of these combos that are based on events set up can be pretty challenging. And because you don't hold your cards from turn to turn, you're really incentivized to dump your hand every turn. That's basically the issue. And then, yeah, I agree. Domino, I think, is really interesting. And so she has this ability where you can swap a card in your hand for the top one on your deck, and then playing with her with scenarios or other things that are also interfacing with your deck, I think could get really interesting.
Yeah, and the fact that every card in her set except Yuuzhan
Yeah.
is wild is really insane. Like if you, it means that any of those requirement type cards, you just don't have to worry about them so much.
She definitely promises to be very interesting. So I guess the word is that we're not going to see the word on the street is we're not seeing this content till August. So it's going to be quite a bit longer in between things since the last. What are you going to do with yourself in Marvel Champions from now till August?
Well, there's definitely Solo Champions League. I've played all the X-Men so far, but I've only played Mutant Genesis once, and I still haven't really delved too far into all of the characters. I'm playing a lot of Rogue at the moment, because she's right up there as one of my new favorite characters. I was not sure, actually. Really similar situation to Nebula. I looked at the cards and I wasn't sure because there's no resource generators or anything in there. When they released the pack, the news article for her, I was like, this looks interesting. I definitely know some things I want to try with her, like making her the Sorcerer Supreme. Once I kind of built the deck and started playing her, I was like, wow, this character is so much fun. And it is a lot of events. She's very event driven, and but you can change the way that your events work, which is interesting. And you she's got a such a cool ready effect and energy transfer where you can switch your touched around and basically do a momentum shift by healing and dealing damage to an enemy and readying at the same time and changing the focus of your touched, which interestingly on both the energy transfer card and Rogue, you actually keep the traits until the end of the phase. So, when you touch someone, you'll keep all of those traits, even if you move that off the character. You won't keep the effect. Like if it's on an ally, you get aerial, so you'll lose the aerial, or you'll lose the stalwart if you take it off one of the heroes. But you keep the traits that they had, so you could still be an Avenger until the end of the phase, which I thought's really, really interesting. Stuff going on with Rogue. So yeah, I've really been enjoying her, and I've been playing her in this campaign that my daughter created, which is she wanted to make a campaign, and it was a fun activity that we did for a while. Probably took us about 3 or 4 hours to put together a five scenario campaign. And we've played the first two scenarios, but I can give you a kind of a quick rundown of what it is,
Yes,
because I
I'd love
think
to
that
hear
she
about
did
it.
a really nice job. So she had one idea in her head at the start, which is ended up being the scenario two, and she's like, this is kind of where I want to go. So she started off with the idea that she wanted to have an attack on nowhere. So we chose tower defense, but we changed out Avengers Tower for nowhere. And on nowhere, we have Tombstone. He's running a shakedown of a shawarma place on nowhere. So that's kind of like the side story that's happening while you're trying to protect Nowhere from this attack from the Black Order. There's a few things that we threw in there to kind of make it add some scenario stuff to it, like the Shawarma place and the secure the landing pad from the original actual Attack on Nowhere set, which is the mystical guy, which I've forgotten the name of right now.
Ebony Maw.
Yeah, Ebony Maw, that's right. And so this was pretty fun. And she kind of like didn't want the players to know why they'd ended up on nowhere. It's kind of like you've sort of ended up here, which kind of ties into the whole the rest of the thing. So then the second scenario, which is it gets even weirder, you've saved nowhere, or maybe you didn't quite save the tower or the actual head from being damaged, and then you end up in the nowhere mainframe. So you're actually thrown into the computer system of nowhere.
Yeah.
And we decided that Mysterio was the best villain for this. And she really wanted to have Sci-Fi and Sentinels as your enemies that you're fighting in the mainframe.
Right.
So we threw in some weird things like hack the security system, which made sense as a thing. You're inside a computer and enemy of my enemy so that you can get like the Magneto out to help you. And she also wanted to have Longshot. So Longshot actually persists through some of the rest of the campaign. She really enjoyed Mojo, and she loves the stories of Marvel Champions.
Right.
So scenario three, we've got out of the mainframe. We're trying to get back home to Earth. So we're in the Milano. And along the way, we encounter the asteroid of Armin Zola. So he's in space.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, he's in space. Now, this is where we got a bit crazy. We're like, wouldn't it be interesting if the Magus was here? So we took the Magus set out of Adam Warlock, his Nemesis set, threw that in, you've got Ship Command, and you're trying to find the prisoners in here because he's already captured your allies, so we threw in some more like ally capture stuff from one of the scenarios, and a bunch of other stuff. So Longshot's also still with you. Mm-hmm. So if you escape that, you end up back on Earth. But is this Earth? You end up in a Sentinel sitcom. So this is Project Wide Awake. We've got some frightened police and a bit of public outcry. But the main, and Operation Zero Tolerance, obviously. But the core part of this was that you use the down-to-Earth set and the sitcom set. And the show event starts in play. So you're like, are we really on Earth? Because we're in this weird sort of thing. And finally, you get to the finale and you find out that one of the things that we've had along the way is you start with the Kang Master of Time card in the encounter deck. And all of the the side schemes that are part of the Mutant Genesis campaign that bring in future past cards when you finish them.
Yep.
We've got a lot of those, and every time you complete one of those, you bring in the next two cards from the Master of Time set. So, like, it starts with Ancient Grudge, and then I think it puts in the Obligations, and then the Minions, and then finally the Side Scheme. So you build up in a similar way that you would build up the Future Past stuff or the Badoon Headhunter in the other campaigns. And this, you build up this Kang Master of Time set as you're slowly going through the campaign. So you find it at the end that what's really been happening is that Kang has the Infinity Gauntlet, has been shifting reality. And so you have to go up against Kang with the Infinity Gauntlet with Fantasy and Mystique. And that's the campaign that she put together.
Very, very fun.
Yeah, so there's a few things going on. I haven't quite figured out, because we only played two, all of the campaign bonuses you get, but I've been basically saying, like, when we complete a side scheme, you get a point, and then, like, so for each point that you get, I'll do it a little bit similar to the Sinister motives, where kind of the enemies get a bit of a reward, and you get a bit of a reward. We did end up in that second scenario when we played it. I was like, oh, I don't know that sci-fi show should start and play, because it gives toughness to everything. And it will never go away because no other show environment's coming into play. So it came out halfway through our game, and it made it very, very hard but fun. So, like, your shifting apparitions come out, and they come out with toughness, and you're like, ah.
Yeah.
So I think for added difficulty, I'd definitely be like, yeah, if you were playing on expert mode, start this thing and play, because it made that a bit of a challenge. But yeah, that's her kind of creative mind within this game. And I think, like, we didn't really have to make up stuff. to make a campaign out of all the contents that's there, which I think is awesome. You know, we could just use like things and just tell a different story with the cards that we have, without really changing things other than like, oh, we'll put nowhere instead of the Avengers Tower, but it's still the same scenario. It's just a different like thing that we're using. So just, yeah. So it's actually been really fun so far. I've enjoyed it a lot.
That's some awesome parent kid quality time.
Yeah, I mean that's what this game's cool for. Like,
yeah.
And I think the other thing that I did with her recently was got her to build her own deck. So she'd been playing decks that I'd built for her. She's only played She-Hulk really, Gamora a couple of times, but she loves She-Hulk, so she plays She-Hulk all the time. And she'd played it enough now that she kind of knows the things that she likes. So I said, hey, did you want to build your own deck? And she's like, oh, yeah. And so we basically just went through all of the cards. She decided she wanted to do aggression. So all of the aggression, all the basic cards, and she pulled out stuff. And kind of as we're going, we talked about, like, the things that she could do. So she chose, like, some things that she wanted to do. So in the end, now she's got her own deck. And because she built it and she knew what all of the, like, combos and reasons for things are, when she sees them in her hand, she knows what they're for, instead of like before it was like, oh, why would I play this? Now she wants to play things to get things syncing together, which is super cool. So and she's, you know, every time she's like, oh, you know, are you happy with your deck? And she's like, yeah, I think it's really working, I really like it, it's it's good for my play style. I'm like, yeah, this is super cool. So
yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, I've got plenty of things I can do with Marvel Champions until the X-Force box comes out. There's so much content to still go through.
So much content to still go through, and you know, Innsmouth Bear has the next 5 to 10 seasons mapped out already. So you know, we're in good hands. We're in good hands. Let's dig into this current round and. Quick reminder, just for those that are following along but aren't folks who actually play solo Champions League, this season is the No More Avengers season. After the first round against Loki, all the Avengers got snapped away and we're not allowed to use Avengers cards at all. We're in round 4, and we're up against Wrecking Crew. So we played Absorbing Man in round 3, and then Wrecking Crew emerged from the smoke to fight us. And so we got Wrecking Crew on Expert. We can talk about what Expert means with Wrecking Crew in a moment. And then again, we have... Oh, my dog. We have... If your faction is Champions, you can play Ms. Marvel or Nova. If your faction is Guardians, you can do Adam Warlock, Drax, Groot, or Rocket. If it's Web Warriors, you can do Spider or Ghost Spider, and if it's X-Men, you can do Gambit, Phoenix, or Wolverine. And we're locked into aggression, and our deck building constraints are, again, nothing that has an Avengers trait, and at least one card that requires or has your faction trait, and at least two cards with one of the other faction traits. So if you choose Champions, you have to have at least two cards that have Guardians, Web Warriors, or X-Men. So that's the big summary of the round. But Jarrett, you're going to maybe tell us a little bit about what we need to know about Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, so Wrecking Crew was one of the early scenario packs and the first multi-villain scenario that FFG created for us. So we face all four members of Wrecking Crew at the same time. And I know a lot of people don't really love this set because... One of the core things is there's no modular sets that you can add to it. It's always the same, which the pro of that is very quick to set up. And that it's also a little easy to kind of game the system. I'll go into why. But for Solo Champions League, the fact that you can do that is probably what makes it a really interesting one to play. So here we have like the four villains. They each have their own effects and their own side scheme that if the side scheme gets completed, you get a punishment. So this is kind of where you can sort of try and determine which villain you want to face each round based on whether you want to suffer their punishment or take on their big kind of type of attack. So Wrecker, he's the leader. He attacks hard if undefended. So he'll increase his strength if the attack is undefended. And his scheme is, and when I've played this normally, does damage to everyone when it completes. And I love allies, so this is like a horrifying scheme to want to see completed. But in this scenario that we talk about today, I actually found that this was one of the easiest ones to just let go. Yeah. Thunderball does damage to everyone after attack, so this guy you never want to attack, not once, not ever. And his scheme stuns everyone, which is pretty bad, depending on the type of character. I find this, in solo Champions League, because you're trying to kind of do it fast, can be pretty frustrating. Normally, you can probably just sort of survive this, and it's not a big deal. Bulldozer has overkill, so he really is not someone you want to face on the attack, but his scheme just discards 8 cards from your deck, so anytime you want to go to Alter Ego, trying to get Bulldozer up as the villain on deck would be the way to go. And Pile Driver, he has Retaliate, so pain to attack. His scheme discards an upgrade or support of the highest cost, which is brutal for a lot of like combo type players.
Yep. Yep.
And the thing that I would say about Pile Driver is there's some cards in his deck that I never want to see, so I almost never want Pile Driver to be on deck, specifically in the way I was playing this time. He isn't like super challenging in terms of strength and thwart, because the scheme is already quite low, but there's always that risk that you could lose your highest support, so he's definitely someone you kind of want to keep away and not let him like have the baton or whatever they kind of pass around. In general, you face one villain each round, but the game, and you can, this is where you can game it by reducing the threat on the scheme. So whatever the scheme is highest is the villain that you're going to like face, and possibly potentially you set it up so you suffer the easiest punishment. Like, for example, when Bulldozer is thwarting, you're not so worried about losing 8 cards from your deck.
Yeah.
What I think the scenario does really well is that while you only fight one villain each round, there's lots of ways in the decks to kind of pass that around, whether it's from the boost effects or the buddy system card. So you can actually have it swap, and it makes it feel like they are a team. That probably doesn't do enough, like the scenario is pretty easy, but especially because there's a lot of cards which don't do much. But I know some people up this challenge by playing on Heroic 1, where you get 2 encounter cards, which I think really can add to that sense of, like, you know, the torch might get passed from one villain to another, and then you'll also get another encounter card. So there's enough going on when you get those dead encounter cards, like held hostage, that they could actually be a bit more of a threat. I'm kind of glad we didn't do that in Solo Champions League, but if you are finding the scenario super easy, I know that's a way that you can make it more interesting. And in multiplayer, I think you probably don't need that anyway. The scenario does work better with 3 or 4 people.
Yeah, I've never played it multiplayer.
Yeah, it's actually pretty fun because they have a lot more health. So you have to really think about how you're taking them down. It's not easy to be like, I'm going to get rid of Thunderball right now because he does the bad stuff. It takes a while, and you will end up with cards to watch out for, like Distracting Taunts, which is from the Pile Driver deck, where it forces you have to attack him. So, and he gets extra health for it too. In multiplayer, the extra health isn't that much, and you could probably get rid of the Distracting Taunts. But because he's got Retaliate, you have to suffer the Retaliate to get rid of the Distracting Taunts. So in a multiplayer game, that can be like a nice little aside to force you away from the villain you're trying to kill. It's like, oh, damn it, I have to attack Pile Driver now instead of Thunderball. In solo, this card was very frustrating when it came out, because you'd have to either switch your strategy to taking out Pile Driver first, to whoever you might have wanted to take out first, or if you were playing multi-attack cards, like quite a lot of us were with the Dive Bomb Hone Technique decks.
Yes.
We can't play Dive Bomb. Like, if Distracting Taunts is out, or any of the guard minions, you can't play Dive Bomb because you can't attack the villain, or if in the case of the guard, or anyone except for Power Driver if Distracting Taunts is out. So because Dive Bomb attacks everyone, it's like not legal. So that was a card I was personally trying to avoid, and I think it's a pretty annoying card in general. And the other card that I really didn't want to see was Mystical Link. And I saw this quite a few times. It was something I had to really plan for, because it puts two on every side scheme. So, and I was often keeping Wrecker on deck because I just thought he was easiest to deal with. You could either throw an ally in front of him, or I was just going to take the two damage because I didn't have allies out. So I was often letting him play, but Mystical Link would come out, and then a bunch of the other side skins could go off, and it was like, so because it adds two to all of them. So that was a card where I was like, oh, if I don't want Mystical Link to go off, I need to make sure I adjust some of the threat down.
Yes.
Because there's a possibility that it comes out. But those were the kind of the two cards that I sort of was like mostly worried about in the decks. Everything else I felt was you could kind of ignore. Like Held Hostage was like, okay, well, I wasn't really mm-hmm. worrying about the threat on the schemes anyway. Because for Solo Champions League, like they go away. So you don't need to deal with them. You could just ignore them, and the only reason you might like slightly adjust them was to make sure that a certain villain was attacking. Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's also where you were talking about the distracting taunts, right? You're often using defeating one of the villains as a way to clear its side scheme, right? It's like, because once it's gone, its side scheme is gone. So you can push some of those up to 8 or 9, ones that you don't actually want to go off, but because you're planning on defeating the villain right away, you don't worry about it so much. But then when Distracting Taunts comes out, you have to take on the other one, and all of a sudden some side schemes that you were going to take out because you're going to defeat the villains go off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's those sorts of things where it's like, if you weren't worried about the side scheme because you were either going to clear it or it didn't have an effect, but then suddenly it shifts to a different person and you're like, hang on, wait a second, or a Mystical Link goes off and you're like, oh. So it doesn't necessarily get out of hand, but it definitely can slow you down with kind of the wrong things happening. I definitely thought it was pretty fun. Was not fun with Drax, though. Because, as you said, like on Expert, it doesn't mean a lot. They've got extra health. They've got extra better stats. They actually have really good stats. Like Wrecker is a 3-scheme, 2-attack with actually, I think he's 3-3. Yeah, 3-scheme, 3-attack with like +2 on an undefended attack. So these are like right up there with some of the stronger villains in the game. The stats that they have. So on Expert, they're no pushovers. They're no joke. When they are actually activating, and that was where I think the scenario works best, is when you get extra activations out of it. When you get cards that kind of do nothing, it's like, oh, this is just an attachment. It does nothing, and this is probably a great scenario where they probably could have put Surge on cards like Held Hostage or Ball and Chain or any of the things that just attach to the villains and don't do anything. And that, just by doing that, might have made it more challenging. But having said that, some people probably who are still playing this game on, they're learning this game, the scenario is not going to be super easy anyway, because you're just like learning it. It's when you know the game very, very well that the scenario becomes easy. So it's probably better to kind of just have this as a fun scenario like it is. And if people really want a challenge out of it, then, they can make it heroic. And I think that Solo Champions, like what we're trying to do in Solo Champions, means that you have some fun, like trying to
That's right.
figure out the puzzle. Weird. Yeah.
Well, you know, you also brought, I was thinking when you were talking about other ways, you know, I think if this set was designed now, they might have brought in some of the things that they did from the Sinister Motives box in terms of if you're playing on expert, this card also does this. Right? That would be a different way. So the version that is standard could actually be as it is, but maybe some of these cards that have minimal effect have more impactful effects, even if it's, you know, on expert, this card gains surge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
It would be as simple as that, really. And
yeah.
I do feel like if this scenario was designed now, they wouldn't make four decks. But you could, right. They'd probably pull that whole deck together so that you could have modular sets. You could have obligations.
Yeah.
You could have... you could add standard or expert. I do like the way it works, and I think it was a good experiment. But they probably learned from this that all of the other multi-villain scenarios use a single encounter deck, and they probably do it because the fact that people were like, this is fine and it's fun, but it's not something I want to play over and over again because it never changes.
Yep, agreed.
Having just played it over and over again, it was still pretty fun.
Because you're solving a puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, when you play it with... So you're not going to, when you play with, like, multiplayer with friends, you often don't play things over and over again. Like, everything's kind of feels fresh anyway. So you don't pull out Wrecking Crew, like, you know, every week to play Wrecking Crew. You probably pull out Wrecking Crew, like, you know, maybe every 2 months or 3 months, and you're like, hey, cool, let's have a challenge. And that would be fine in a multiplayer scenario. Or not a challenge, I guess, depending on your friends. But like the people that I play with don't play as much, so Wrecking Crew would be fine. You know, maybe I'd be like, let's play as an expert. I probably wouldn't, because the only thing the expert does is make it take longer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you want to, you've kind of led into yourself really well, you were mentioning Drax, but you want to talk about your experience this round and maybe talk, I know you played some different decks on top of the ones you actually played officially.
Yeah, I played everyone except Adam Warlock in terms of the Guardians. So I chose Guardians this season. And one of the reasons I chose Guardians is I was pretty keen to play Ebula, Star-Lord, and Venom, and I kind of was keen on getting a challenge out of one of the other more difficult heroes. Unfortunately, Nebula and Star-Lord were in the opening round, so I had to choose between them. And I had to play Gamora in the second round, and she's actually one of my least favorite heroes, just because she's so mechanical, does the same thing over and over again, and I find her a little boring. I think she's more fun in multiplayer where she's not as powerful. But yeah, it was still a good round. It wasn't a huge puzzle to solve with her, but so this round I finally got, like, the doors were like blown open and I was like, okay, well, I'm not super keen on playing Adam Warlock here. I did have like an idea in my head for like this weird Aerial Supremacy deck where you could recur Aerial Supremacy. But he's not Aerial. And so it would require getting a lot of aerial allies out to make it actually work. And I was like, this is too hard. Deck building for him is like not super fun, I find, because it's you have to look at like your entire collection. It's just like overwhelming. So I didn't try anything with him, but I did. I wanted to try Drax first, and I tried a couple of ideas with Drax. And the thing that I was struggling with Drax, and I lost the first game I tried. I was like, played it again with a couple of tweaks on the deck and managed to get eke out a win. But because they're so big and he has to take hits, and it's very difficult to determine which one with Drax, you don't have as much control over the threat. So you're kind of just taking whoever is on deck, and you're getting this big hit, and it might be Wrecker, and you're like, okay, well, that was like 7 or 8 damage I just took. Drax might have 14 health, but it doesn't actually go very far against the wrecking crew. So he was like always like struggling. And you want to get Drax like flipped and going early. So the meditation technique that I think could work really well in this scenario wasn't something that you wanted to try with Drax. So yeah, it was tricky. I tried a bunch of things. And he sort of worked. He could definitely punch out things at about 6 rounds, which wasn't too bad. I was using too many things, like just to really get his strength up there. So like the symbiote suit, an extra combat training, like a bunch of things to get him up to like 7 or 8 strength, so that he would like actually be able to just deal with these things straight away. But it's like it's such a slow build up, and you have to take way too much damage in the process that you almost are forced to flip back to alter ego and destroy all your progress. So I just found kudos to everyone who played Drax and actually did pretty well with him. I was struggling. I was like, I thought Drax would be fun here. I definitely think Drax would be fun in the round before, but it was the fact that they were so big hitters. Meant that it was tough because you can't just throw allies in front. You have to take the hits at first. So that was tough. So I did try out Rocket and Groot, and I liked both of the decks that I made for them. The Groot deck, I did this weird thing where you power up all the X-Men and then just let them do all the attacking, and you sit in Groot and Alter Ego and build up all your counters. So that when you go to, and you use meditation constantly to get out things, so that you're not wasting your hero activation.
Yeah.
And then you'd flip, and you'd have like 8 to 10 growth counters, so you're pretty much ready to go. And you could do like big, you know, 8 to 10 stompy attacks, or clear the threat off the main scheme, which is slowly building up. That's the other thing in the scenario. The main scheme goes to 6, but it only accrues 1 at a time. So once you get to 5, there's no threat of you losing the main scheme as long as you can clear it.
Yes.
So the core thing with the threat removal was that you just try and get rid of the threat near the end, or like keep it maintained along the way. So I thought, yeah, the Groot deck was pretty fun. It actually worked really well. It was pretty consistent. But I just had more fun with Rocket. And Rocket did a similar thing. Like, I went for this meditation idea of like getting out, like paying for the cards that I want to get out. Like Brawn, who was an absolute superstar in this round.
Agreed.
Just like pinging a damage and then removing one of the threat from the main scheme, or like bringing one of the side schemes down so that the side schemes were level and I could pick my villain. And the fact that he could do it 5 times, just every time I got Brawn out, the game was definitely going in my favor. And as much as I had like this combo thing going with Rocket, which was getting out home technique and doing dive bomb and planning to do 2 dive bombs and trying to get out of there in 4 to 5 rounds, was sort of what I was trying to do. So I would stay in Rocket in Alter Ego for around about 3 turns, flip on the 3rd or the 4th turn, after meditating at a bunch of the things that I need to get out, often putting down like one of his battery packs, charging up a pistol and then chucking the battery pack. So I had a really strong hand, so I could constantly have like an 8 card hand on the next turn. And then once you go in, you either fire off the 1 dive bomb 1 turn and then dive bomb the next turn, or if you were super lucky, you could get 2 at once. My games were, the first game was 5 rounds, and this was a weird one in that I got the aerial boot straight away, but I didn't see hone technique until like the bottom like 10 cards of my deck. So
And you had 3 copies?
Yeah. And so I had one in my hand, and then it got chucked out by a discard a card from hand card. And I was like, it was random card. And so I was like, wow, okay, so there's two more left, right, in my deck. And I was able to do something to draw a card. I can't remember what it was. Yeah, no, I do remember what it was. Rocket, when he overkills something or does excess damage to something, draws a card. So I was able to use Rocket on the guard or the surge minion that was out and kill him with my cannon or something, I think. And then I did the overkill damage and I got the card and it was a hone technique. So I was able to play hone technique, but I didn't have enough resources to play a dive bomb. So I was like, okay, this is not great. So I held on to the dive bomb and kind of set myself up for next turn. I think I held on to
One
two
more.
dive bombs. And I drew enough resources on the next turn to do two dive bombs to get out of there. But it was just like this insane game where it wasn't really going my way at all until it all went my way on the fifth turn. The next game was like the deck did exactly what it was supposed to do and kind of flipped to hero on the third turn, dive bombed, and then dive bombed on the fourth turn, and that was it. So that was like, it was perfect. But the sixth game was actually the one where I feel like it was the best game of the lot because didn't I played one dive bomb, not two, and things definitely went wrong. I think I went to hero. I was like, I'm all ready, and then I'm like, I haven't actually got my boots yet, so I'm not aerial, so I can't dive bomb. And so what ended up happening in that game was I ended up just having to work out how to use all of the guns that Rocket has, and playing the reload card to reload everything and using the extra charges. And so I fired off like all the cannons like multiple times. And this is even the cannon, which isn't that useful in this scenario because it's like that's two to every minion and the villain. Actually, only one villain, like you don't get to do damage to all of the wrecking crew, you only get to do two damage to the one who's on deck, like has the active villain marker. So it was a really complex puzzle of trying to figure out how to do the damage to finish off the game in the sixth round because only one of the villains was like up, so my the rocket launcher had to go two damage into him. And which I think was key to the deck was the I've forgotten the name of it now, the one which you add one to your attack events or to your attack, which works really well with dive bomb.
I'm just grabbing it because I forget too. It's one of the new ones.
It's a new card. You get three counters on it. When you make an attack, you can increase the attack damage by one. And on a dive bomb, it increases everything. In this game, I was able to use that on a dive bomb and an aggressive energy. So I did get like a really big dive bomb. But the rest of these counters went into overkilling with a rocket launcher or adding an extra damage with my pistol to get the calculation correct to take out the last two villains. So it was a longer game. It went six turns, but it was kind of because nothing went my way and I really had to change my focus to finish off the game quickly. I thought it was like the best one I played.
When you
Pretty
actually
fun.
did rocket stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, was that I was kind of doing rocket stuff anyway because I was using the various guns. But this one is
Because you
like,
had them
well,
out, yeah, that's right.
it just was like, how do I solve this puzzle and get out of here instead of like going another two turns? Like, and it was almost like this is the game I feel that should score the best, even though I know that in SCL this is not the game that's going to score the best, but it was definitely the best play that I made. Because I really had to like think and play well to do it, as opposed to like, yeah, the deck did exactly what I wanted it to do like everything came out in the right time. The villains never put up any threat. Like that game is like, cool, well, you know, this was what I built the deck for and practiced for, so it did it. I didn't have to worry. No thinking was involved. Whereas the 6-turn game was like a lot of thinking was involved, and that was like made it both more fun, more challenging, and more rewarding in the end.
And a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never felt like, I mean, with Drax, I felt like I was definitely in danger of losing, but with Rocket and the kind of the idea of not being in hero much, only kind of jumping in there and jumping back out, I never felt like I was in danger of losing the game. Rocket was really good at clearing the threat off the main scheme and then going at healing. Yeah. How about you?
So I was going to say the upgrade that you're talking about is called Warrior Skill. It's out of the Wolverine pack, and it's got Psylocke on the for the art. So you know what I did after you posted your. So I did this with Astrodar, and I did it with you when you posted your decks, because I was playing a different faction than you. I was like, oh, I wonder who in X-Men I could emulate this deck with, because that seemed like a fun thing to do. So Astrodar had made a spider deck, and so I made a Gambit deck that kind of tried to leverage some of the same things, right? Pointing out all the damage thresholds, you know, like whatever the armed guards or whatever they're called have 3 health and all those other things, and just kind of recognizing what are some really useful events to pay attention to those. So I tried that out with Gambit. That was really fun. And then I tried out what you were doing with Rocket. I tried out with Phoenix. And she doesn't quite, you know, the nice thing you pointed out about Rocket is when he's staying an alter ego, he has a lot of stuff he can put on the board that's really productive without flipping. So Phoenix doesn't quite have a bunch of stuff to build up, so you don't want to stay in alter ego like you do with Rocket. But I still had fun. I did a Hone Technique deck with Phoenix. But then ultimately, I actually played Gambit and just kind of leaned into those really efficient attacks in terms of, you know, melee and 1x1, the things that work really well when you have a bunch of his charge counters, and using things like the Warrior Skill and the Aggressive Energy and all those pieces. So that was really quite fun. Nothing, honestly, it was not an especially eventful one. I don't, it was one of the ones I didn't quite write down my turn by turn way that it played out. So it was basically I had a bit of a scare against Bulldozer at one point, because if you get attacked by him and he's got overkill, you can definitely get hurt. So you have to really be careful about that one. And I think I got, and I don't know if I was paying enough attention or whatever it was, but I just about died to Bulldozer one of the games.
Yep.
But recovered, you know.
Yeah, I didn't like Bulldozer attacking.
No, I mean, you were playing such that you were really avoiding attacks anyway, for the most part.
Yeah, it was really trying to get Bulldozer the scheme was my plan.
Yeah. And often I'll play quite a few more practice rounds, try out some of the other heroes, get a sense of what some of the other experiences are. But with this many heroes, and I kind of have a limited attention span for Wrecking Crew. I do enjoy the puzzle, but I don't know if I want to play it much more than really focusing on getting my deck up and running and executing. So I didn't end up playing a bunch of other heroes like I might normally.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say with Phoenix. I think not having lots of cards to put out early. Because with one of the things that I was doing was not using many allies. So I only had 4, which is super unusual. And most of them had to be champions. So it was like Angela and Braun and Ironheart. And one other I can't remember. Might have been Nick. I don't know if it was. Because I wasn't using many allies, I was prepared to take the 2 damage hit on the first round from Wrecker. I was just like, that Wrecker's going to scheme. I'll let his scheme go our way, and then it'll be easy to adjust a scheme down to get bulldozer on deck. So that was sort of the plan that I had. And like with less allies, I wasn't going to be putting out an ally first turn. But with Phoenix, that'd almost be what you'd want to do if you were trying to meditate things in and play stuff. You'd want to be doing things with allies with her, which would make it a bit trickier to kind of do the strategy that I had with Rocket, whereas Rocket could like get out like a bunch of equipment, maybe get out a home technique if lucky, and then next turn play the allies. Yeah.
Anyway, it was fun. I do enjoy the puzzle of Wrecking Crew. I just don't have infinite patience for doing it over and over and over again. So played a, you know, tried a couple different things and then committed and went. Well, let's look at the results from this round. So by popularity, we saw, I mean, first of all, the majority, well, the plurality of people are taking the X-Men. So we saw Gambit at 19%, Wolverine at 16%, and Phoenix at 9%. And then Web Warriors, we see Spider at 10%, Ghost Spider at 12%. With the champions, we see 15% for Nova, 7% for Ms. Marvel, and then Guardians are kind of the least popular of the factions. We got Groot at 2%, Drax at 3%, and Rocket at 7%.
And no Adam Warlock. Yeah. So that was the character that wasn't played. Yeah, usually someone plays everything.
You know, there's usually on the order of about 100 people, so the percent is roughly a count of people when you're looking at some of the small numbers. And then in terms of actual performance, we saw Spider overall did the best with a approval rating of 105.4 and 100% win rate. One of the slower ones overall, but in part, sometimes the turns is, you know, you have to factor in the when people lose, they often lose fast, so that the turns is also related to your win percentage. Drax also had 100% win rate and was kind of middle of the pack for overall performance. Ms. Marvel had a 58% win rate and was the worst approval rating of all. And Groot was the second worst win percentage at 67%. So, you know, some heroes that were pretty tough. I suspect people didn't try to all do your approach to Groot.
Yeah, I they probably didn't. it's too easy to kind of just go, oh, yep, flip and go. But I think Groot is much stronger when he has all that protection. So, like, you look at the hero score for, like, how much health you've got left. And Groot was never touched when I was playing him. Like, he never took any.
Right.
The only damage he would take would be things like Wrecker damage, because that damage is when he's an alter ego. So if the Wrecker scheme went off, he would take damage in alter ego. I think there was a couple of other ways you could take damage in alter ego, and the counters can't save you then. So you don't lose the counters, but they don't protect you because it's a hero response. So that was the only time Groot would take damage. So generally it's like if you play the counters and you take damage on counters for sure, but your allies are taking, you know, they boost your health. So but there was definitely some losses there, so people lost with Groot, so the hero score is always going to be lower. But yeah, I felt like if you stuck around with Groot, and I didn't stay in alter ego. Actually, I think I stayed in alter ego longer with Groot than with Rocket. Like, I would try and build up four turns and then go on the fourth turn, and if you got a fruition, that was, you were usually on 10 counters. And you didn't really need to worry about the threat from the main scheme.
Well, plus you were playing with allies, so...
Yeah, yeah. So the allies were...
You had that.
...big damage, right? So you're trying to get out the X-Men allies and put on the training. I did try with... tried it with other allies with, like, Sidearm. I don't think it was as good as the X-Men. It was about the same, but I think the X-Men with the attack training, and I didn't use Utopia because I kind of asked the question this round, if anyone can use the alter ego ability on that, and then the extra so that card lets you exhaust it in alter ego to when you play a X-Men or mutant character, I think, to put a training on it. Maybe it is an X-Men character, because I think the training cards only go on X-Men characters. Put a training card from your discard pile onto the character, which is cool. But I never quite understood that card, because the last text is that like any mutant character in Alter Ego can trigger this ability. So I was like, does that mean that only a mutant character can trigger the original Alter Ego, or that anyone can trigger the original Alter Ego, but anyone else who doesn't control this card can also use the card, which is what it is. And I think that would make that deck like a slightly bit better. So if you got Utopia in there and maybe used Forge to make sure it came out, then you could get these attack training cards onto your allies a lot faster. And then you have things like Wolverine, who has 6 health and suddenly is pretty good. Because I was trying to use Game Time as well, and I was finding that it wasn't syncing up enough, and you have to be in Hero for Game Time. So it didn't quite work with the deck. So it sort of, a lot of it felt like cool, but it wasn't clicking, which is why I didn't play it, or didn't choose to play it. I did play it like a few times to test it out. Like it worked.
Right, and for those that aren't familiar with Game Time, just because that's a rarely used card, it's a zero cost basic event. Hero action, choose an ally with a training upgrade attached. Ready that ally, heal 1 damage.
Yeah, so this card is only useful on X-Men characters, because only X-Men characters currently can have the training upgrades on them. And you need to be in Hero form to play it. So that was the... Once I started playing, I was like, oh, you have to be in Hero for this? That's annoying. But if you've got like a really strong like Wolverine with a sidearm and an attack training, and he can do like 5 piercing damage to... 5 piercing range damage to Pile Driver, and then heal 1, it's pretty fun. So yeah, but the deck was fun.
So let me have a quick look at the things we have here for some of the other stats for the heroes. So Drax was the slowest at 11.5 turns. Nova 6.8, and this is because Nova has inherent aerial and so can get up and running with the Hone Technique dive bomb way quicker than anybody else can.
Yes.
Oh, and then we have
someone got a 2-turn win ahead. With Nova too.
I know.
So cool.
And then we had interestingly, Wolverine finished with a scheme score of 0, even though there's a 96% win rate. So the folks that were playing Wolverine were just not worrying about the schemes too much. And then Ms. Marvel actually had -1.
I think that Ms. Marvel probably lost too many games. Yeah. I think the Drax turns is interesting, so people probably did try and play a bit slower with Drax, which maybe was wise. Because I was trying to get up my counters really fast, and it was just too risky. So if perhaps by playing a slower game and maybe even staying in Alter Ego for a bit longer to get set up, and then going to Hero and maybe defending a bit more to get those counters up, you like conserve your health, and you're at the point where now I can go. So Drax could quite quickly dismantle the villains once he was set up, but setting him up while also taking all of the damage was tricky. So I think like a slower game and a slower approach with Drax is probably a really good idea. I haven't played Drax enough, and I've kind of before this only played him in protection. So playing him in aggression was definitely an eye opener to what you can do with him. But it was definitely fun to try him out. He's a pretty interesting character, tough to play. But if you can get him right, then I think people will really like him. Probably not my thing, but yeah. It was a good challenge.
Right. Yeah, he's definitely limited in terms of kind of aggression and protection are the places where he makes the most sense, at least with the current card pool.
Yeah, I think, leadership could be good for him, because anytime he can get out some cheap allies and draw more cards is going to help any character like that with less hand size. He has a lot of ready effects. So you can add some extra ready effects in there for him, or use things like the R&D facility to kind of make him stronger for like most of his other skills. So I don't know that he's protection definitely feels like the home for him because it's got the best ready effects and extra ones, and you can put things like force field generator up and all of those things to protect him while he's taking the damage. So, and you can heal and untap. There's all these like great things that really work for Drax in protection, but I think there's always ways to kind of figure out how a hero might like shine in the other aspects where either it shores up their weakness or it taps into one of their strengths. So I think I actually feel like aggression is probably one of the weaker ones for him because all it does is kind of like, yeah, Drax, you have to fight and just go, but it doesn't actually cover him because he has to take these attacks, and so he's really like once he's yeah, I don't know. It was tricky for sure. So
I think it's the distinction of solo or not, right? So when he with aggression and you can focus on buffing up his attack and other people can help you stay healthy and other or whatever Moondragon, you can do that. But as a solo, especially when we're thinking about solo Champions League scoring, Drax is not great in aggression.
That is probably true.
Okay, well, let's have a look at our decks. There's nine heroes that ended up getting played, or at least I think that was my quick count of the list. We probably won't, as usual, when we've got this many, we won't go into too much of details for each of these, but we'll just kind of look at some of the general trends and shout out the folks who topped off with the hero. So Spider again was the highest performing hero, and freeze-dried Strahd out of flight two got the top place with a build that was using Web Warriors, and for the off faction ones using Wolverine, Ironheart, and Miles. Wolverine was really, really common as an ally. We saw a lot of people play with Wolverine, and then this build used Boot Camp to pump up the allies and God Slayer to kind of each of those villains is meets the kind of whatever the uniqueness thing is for God Slayer to hit it, and then looking for trouble. Now, this was a thing that I remember you talking about in Discord. So there was a couple copies of Looking for Trouble in here, but you were, I think, having a bit of skepticism about using Looking for Trouble this round.
I guess the value was low because you can't take anything off the side schemes. You can only take stuff off the main scheme with Looking for Trouble. So it's not a thwart card that can help you control the villains. It's just a thwart card that can get rid of threat off the main scheme, which builds up so slowly that you wouldn't even really want to play it until the third turn. You're bringing out probably a guard minion or a.
The other one doesn't have guard.
Yeah, he doesn't have guard, but he has surge. So when you're looking for trouble, him, he won't surge, which is probably that was the best part about using Angela, is like you go look for that guy and just
Yes,
pull him out so you
agreed.
don't surge into another card. But you're looking for trouble, you're kind of like. You don't know who you're going to get, and you could end up going through most of a deck. So they could cycle the deck and then end up putting an acceleration token on the main scheme, which was something that you were trying to avoid. I mean, like you don't have to play it, right? Like it's probably a tool for like, well, when two or three schemers on the main scheme, two or three threat, I will play it, get rid of it, deal with things quickly. I don't think it's not the room, but it probably wouldn't be something you play all the time.
And then Astrodar got second, and I just mentioned that because I had already mentioned his deck. He had Wolverine and attack training, and then Bug and Energy Spear. Well, Energy Spears could go with Angela or Throg, which are also in the deck. So this was the deck that I tried to make a Gambit version of for fun. But I ended up keeping some of that in terms of my actual deck. And then we see, speaking of Gambit, UNC Dave got first and actually went with a bit of a different approach than a lot of the folks did. especially with Gambit, because Gambit has those counters that really make the multiple attack events very, very efficient. But UNC Dave went with a Team Strike build. So Team Strike is an X-Men event, which is exhaust your hero and any number of X-Men allies, deal X damage among enemies in play, where X is the total attack of all the characters you exhausted this way. So this is, you know, a big attack where if you've got Wolverine with attack training and your own attack and those other things, you can have a pretty big attack. But of course, it does exhaust them all, so you lose access to being able to activate them a different way. So it saves you some consequential, but beyond that, is kind of just using the allies for what they already would have done.
Yeah, I mean, the value of a card like this, and this is a really cheap one, is you can get a lot of big damage against someone like Pile Driver, so you'd only take the one retaliate on yourself, or maybe you even just take him out fully. And I think the other value of this is, you know, you do save the health on your allies. Like, the health on your allies is what you end up converting into hero score, so you don't always need to worry about the health on your hero if you have enough health on your allies. And if you, I don't know if this build had a boot camp as well, but you can really like pump up the power of like how much damage you do. So Team Strikes could like quite quickly like take out a villain, which is useful.
No boot camp in this one. And then, like I said, no one by one or melee or any of those kind of multi attack ones. So this is a neat build, and like you said, that's a kind of, that is an efficient way to go after Pile Driver. It's probably some neat Cyclops builds to do with that, because there are some other really high attack X-Men minions like Gentle and Havoc and other ones that you actually really want to avoid them having to take consequential damage, because they take it at a pretty high rate and they don't heal like Wolverine.
Havoc's not that high.
No, but he takes the damage when he attacks.
Yeah,
he's got three, doesn't he?
He's only got two, but he pulls the top card of the deck and then adds one attack to but for each pip on it, but takes that much consequential damage. Like Havoc, but I think because usually, like, if you have a team training out, he'll survive like one or two hits. Sometimes he can just like go forever because you just draw a zero. He's actually, people were like, oh no, this isn't a good character. I've found him pretty fun to use, actually. And certainly if you're using it, to me, my X-Men, it's like, well, he can just go and then he probably bounces to your hand. So he's not actually a terrible character. I'm kind of keen to do a build with him with Ready for Action, where you just keep putting tough on him. I think that'd be quite fun, but obviously not for this challenge because we didn't get to play leadership. I think the Team Strike, and there's a Justice version of it as well, which does the same thing. Yep. That was the first deck I played with Cyclops, was the Justice deck with this version of Team Strike for Justice. I can't remember what it's called. And you'd tap all your allies and you just remove heaps of threat. It was very cool.
Yeah. So I like that. I think we saw lots of folks using if honed technique could have been appropriate. A lot of people definitely used it across lots of the heroes. And I think Gambit was one of the ones that it worked well with. And so it was neat to see UNC Dave not doing that and being very successful. Over in Rocket, you got first with your deck that you've already talked about, and then Rekatol, who kind of had a fairly similar approach as well. And then in third, and I bring up third place because this was Zero Sade, had a 12.3 turn average, so really, really slow. Lots of allies using Dive Bomb, but no technique, no home technique. So this is a neat approach.
Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? Using the dive bomb, but not actually going for home technique, trying to do something different with it. It's an expensive card, but it still kind of does maybe what you need it to.
Lots of damage to Piledriver.
And even if you have like any of the aggressive energy or anything like that, it can actually just pump up the value just enough. Oh yeah, it's not a card that I think I tried it before Home Technique one time in a Captain Marvel deck, and it worked pretty well. So I was like, oh, maybe this card's not terrible. But then Home Technique came out and it made it insanely good. So I haven't tried it since by itself. So yeah, it's pretty awesome to see someone do that and do very well with it.
Well, and this is actually tied for also the fewest aspect cards in an aspect deck. So there's five Angela, Sunfire, two energy spears and the two dive bombs. Six. So okay. Did not quite tied, but we actually had a five. But anyway, did quite competitive for the Astrodar fewest aspect cards in an aspect deck, which is something I always love to see how few people can go with for that one. And then, as mentioned, Nova was the kind of the home for the Hone Technique dive bomb, because he's got his helmet on, he's got aerial. And we saw for the top three finishers, Kakita Jamie and D. Leedy and Tom, we saw 4.75 and 4.0 turn averages. So definitely the fastest for the highest performing ones. And you had a five turn average and all these folks tied or had better because they could get to that stuff way quicker, not having to wait for the boots.
Well,
to
they
come
also
out.
Have a lot of extra resources too. So Nova has a lot of resources. So trying to get two dive bombs in one round with Rocket was not easy unless you managed to like overkill some of the minions or villains to get an extra card. Whereas there were some tricks you could do with Nova to like, you could use it, then you could get it back. So if you had like a double resource, you probably were able to get two off as well. But I think the thing with Nova, and I didn't bother doing it with Rocket, I was only aiming for dive bomb, but with Nova you could really go with the melee and stuff as well, so any Hone Technique double attack card was going to be valuable with Nova, because again with the resources he's an event based hero, so if you get a Hone Technique out early, then flipping to Alter Ego and playing melee or dive bomb is going to be useful. So there's lots of ways of doing big damage really quick with him. He's such a cool hero, though. Such a cool hero.
Agreed. Wolverine, we saw top player with Wolverine was a Tordek RPG coming out of Flight 3, and they got the Party at the Triskelion Award for most allies. This was 12 allies in their deck. Just reminding myself here, we see we got Clobber and Melee and Precision Strike, which was something I don't see included all that often. So deal 2 damage to an enemy. If this attack defeats that enemy, heal 2 damage from your hero. So that's, in terms of you're trying to use your health as a resource as Wolverine, ways that are buffing up your health is giving you access to effectively more resources. So when you can use Precision Strike to finish something off, you're then trading that for future resources, basically.
I do like something like you use your claws on Clobber, which is 2 damage. Straight away, you get Clobber back into your hand. You basically haven't spent anything.
Yeah.
Except for 2 health. The 2 damage from Precision Strike is great against like those little convicts. And you just like you can just kill them with that, get some health back. There's definitely some cool things going on here.
Right, and then if you have some of the other things we've been mentioning, like the warrior skill or other things like that, you can buff that up to be able to take out the guards as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I think warrior skill's actually, that's the thing that I was finding. Similar thing, because the Rocket's pistol does 2 damage. Precision Strike does 2 damage. So if you have a guard, which is 3, and you use the warrior skill, it's like, oh, you don't, it feels like it could be used better, on something like a dive bomb or a melee, but it still has a lot of value on something like precision strike, especially if you're trying to get that health back with Wolverine.
You know, even broadly, you know, I think the some of the new X-Men cards that, well, they're from the X-Men sets, not from the X-Men. They're not specifically X-Men cards, but the ones that allow you to add, you know, one of a stat to an ally or something like that, just being able to most efficiently, you know, oh, I need one extra damage for this thing, so I can use this upgrade to do that. I've found that they're remarkably useful, honestly.
Yeah, the leadership training.
Yeah.
That's a really cool card. And I think the cool thing about the attack, the warrior skill, leadership training, I haven't really played the Wart one that much. But the cool thing about all of those cards is that they don't exhaust to get used. So you can play a leadership skill and use all three counters on three ally activations in that turn. Yeah, and I think that's what's really kind of quite cool about them. So the attack, the warrior skill's the same. Like, you can use it on your attack, your event, and maybe another event. You probably wouldn't be able to play two events and warrior skill in the same turn, but unless you're maybe Nova. Those possibilities are there. It's like, oh, this is, they can be quite useful finishing cards, or you can save the token for finishing, stuff like that. Yeah. The leadership skill, I think, is an awesome card, though, for leadership. It's just trying to fit it into a deck with all of the other awesome leadership cards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, warrior skill's great for Rocket. You know, somebody who really cares about having specific amounts of damage. And then second with Wolverine was Mista Mista coming out of the training grounds so that they get the New Mutant Award for the top score in the training grounds this round. So that's great to see folks in the training grounds. And then we saw a lot of people come out of the training grounds once they get a certain number of experience accumulated. They pop out of the training grounds. So we saw a bunch of people leave the training grounds in round four, and there's a few people still in there in five. With Drax, we saw two people that had fairly successful rounds. Also out of the training grounds was Osne, I don't know, with a clobber melee toe-to-toe deck, lots of allies with Drax. And then Kadavaka out of Flight 3 also played Drax. And we got some looking for trouble and a hand cannon, so some of the very fun stuff that you can do with aggression.
Yeah, and he's got like the moment of triumph, so I can see where like there's value in looking for trouble in Angela. I mean, there's always was value for Angela.
Yep.
Like, she was a fantastic ally this round. But yeah, when you want to heal Drax, and this is kind of the thing I was having a problem with, so there's three first aids here. There's three moment of triumphs here. There's the ability to kind of do overkill, so you can pull out like a two health minion with Looking for Trouble or Angela. Then you can overkill that minion with your hand cannon, and you're already set up stats, and you can play Moment of Triumph to get your healing back. So the difficulty with Drax was that you had to sacrifice a lot of health up front in the scenario. So yeah, this is a good way of like getting it back, because that resources, so you, because you almost want to take other hits, because once your counters are on, you draw a card every time you get attacked now. So every time you, so it becomes like you still actually want to keep getting attacked by these villains. You just don't want to get attacked by these particular villains because they're very strong. but yeah, it's a resource that, if you only were taking like three or four damage to get a card, maybe it's worth it. So being able to heal, I think, is a pretty cool strategy. Obviously slower, but like, you need to think about how you play Drax. I was trying to play him too fast, I think. Yeah.
And then next up we have Ghost Spider. We had Maka in Flight 3 getting top, Wayner getting second, and guest host of the pod, T. Eberle, 14th of their name, getting third. I think most of the Wayner and T. Eberle both did Web Warriors, which, you know, makes lots of sense with Ghost Spider. And Aggression has some pretty good synergies for her.
Yeah, I'd love to know what Professor X and Wolverine for like the added bonus, the off faction. It's kind of almost like, what were your off faction cards? Is one of the more interesting questions here. So, yeah, because I was like, I think Brawn and Ironheart were things that I lean towards, just like real simple, fun allies that can do a good trick. Angela's a good one if you're not playing Guardians. Yeah, so Professor X and Wolverine are probably pretty popular as well.
Yeah, I think Wolverine was definitely the most popular looking through all these. Phoenix. So Phoenix, we had Ulpis out of Flight 3 getting tops with a 5-aspect card, so winning the Astrodar Pre-Memorial Award for fewest aspect cards in an aspect deck with 5. And then also 12 allies, so tie for the party at the Triskelion Award for most allies. So Ulpis took home 2 awards this round, and then was they said take advantage that there's no Shadow of the Past and no obligation with the Wrecking Crew, so flipped to Unleashed and went as fast as they could. So that's some awesome recognition about what the scenario is giving you, that some of the challenges that you suffer with Phoenix actually go away in this round. I didn't even notice because I wasn't paying attention to that when I was trying to make a dive bomb deck.
So this is also a big deal for Ghost Spider.
Yes.
There's no obligation to really ruin her. Now, sometimes that obligation can be helpful because it comes out early enough and you haven't seen George, but you know when you get George, you can play him safely in this scenario. So that's a nice bonus for Ghost Spider as well. But yeah, the best Nemesis set in the entire game, not actually having to see it, is a bonus. I mean, I love that set. It's so cool. It's definitely a challenge, but it's very cool, and I love the way, like, especially in a multiplayer game, how it shifts the focus of the game. You're like, wow, okay. The game's still winnable. It's just like such a cool story moment that Nemesis set brings. But definitely, like, the fact that you don't have to suffer it in solo champions in this particular thing. Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a tough one for solo Champions League, right? Because it is very high impact.
It's going to ruin your score big time.
It's going to ruin your score. Second with Phoenix was Ren Aki, 5th of their name. And I'm just pointing this out because they said they, due to most of the supports requiring Alter Ego, was constantly flipping between Hero and Alter, allowing Phoenix to take all the damage and letting the allies do their job and take victory. So Phoenix has her upgrader support that heals 2, and so she's just flipping back and forth, taking the damage from the villains and then using the allies to do all the work. That seems like a fun approach.
Yeah, and this is how I would play Phoenix too, because I tend to try and keep her in the restrained form. And here you take some damage, you go back, you heal, you get an extra counter. So you're constantly having like a really strong economy, because you've got that extra resource to spend every turn. So when I first started playing Phoenix, I was likened her to Carol Danvers, because she's just got a similar economy. She's got like good events, but they're not necessarily important. So you can kind of play a couple of nice alter ego cards, which will help you out. Use the economy to get out whatever your aspect is doing. So she's very versatile. Can play any aspect, and she has the added bonus of the psychic cards and the aggression psychic cards. And I don't know if anyone used it, is 100% my favorite because it confuses the villain. So it's actually really cool.
Yeah, and then maybe if there's ever a Psylocke hero, gives you a bit of a hint of some of the stuff that might be coming there.
Can't wait. Yeah, I think the psionic trait, similar to the Mystic. Can't wait to see what more they do with it.
And then finally, Ms. Marvel, we have Kamehameha, who is out of Flight 2 and was trying to use Embiggen and Hone technique to make some really big melees and stuff like that. This was the only player that had a, you know, very successful round with Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, I think they also talked about what they were doing to flip back and forward and how they could, yeah, I guess, right, manage the villains as well to make sure that they could benefit from all the alter ego stuff that Ms. Marvel does so well.
Yes. And this is one of those scenarios where if that's what you want to do, as you know, you discussed, you were staying in alter ego for many, many turns in a row. This is one of those ones where you can flip constantly if you want.
Yeah, I mean, I always try and find a way to flip as much as possible because I think it's the one of the most rewarding parts of the game. I like,
yes.
Whereas a lot of people try to stay in hero as much as possible, so it's great that you can play multiple ways and that they have heroes that kind of really work for one strategy and really work for another. Like Drax is a hero that, like, once you get to hero, you want to stay there. whereas Ms. Marvel is a hero where you want to try and stay and you know, flip back and forward between the two, take advantage of your alter ego upgrades. And there's a bunch of other characters that are like that as well, where alter ego is like your almost your primary home. You just go and do some stuff in hero and then come back to alter ego. So it's such a cool part of the game.
You and me both. I also love the heroes that flip lots, which is also why I like Justice.
Yeah, especially in solo. I think in solo it's tricky to flip a lot without risking losing the game, like a Rhino, or in solo Champions League, kind of losing a lot by having the main scheme flip.
Or
so there's, yeah, it's yep. Justice has got some excellent ways of making that choice a bit safer. In multiplayer, I don't think it matters so much. You can flip pretty safely. And it's just a matter of managing the threat. As long as everyone doesn't flip at the same time. But even then, it's usually a bad draw, which would flip a main scheme in a solo game. And when you have three people flip and the main scheme was down at zero anyway, chances of getting three bad draws are pretty like, oh, this was a three boost. So that's probably not going to happen. And mm-hmm. it was a three boost and I drew advance. So the threat thresholds are high enough in a three player game that it's like, you're probably not getting three boosts and three advances to force us off this main scheme into the next one. Solo definitely does change up that math a lot. Makes it a lot trickier.
Very much so. Very much so. Jarrett, thank you so much for joining us this week. It was great to have you and to chat with you again.
Thank you. How are you? Have you finished your games for this next round?
I did. I finished them over the weekend. I was playing on Octagon because I usually record my stuff and make sure I don't do anything dumb that I missed or anything like that. And realized that I had two copies of Symbiote, whatever that modular is called, Strength. so I had to go replay all my games, but I managed to get them all replayed this weekend.
Does Octagon figure out the illusion thing, or do you have to?
No,
no,
okay. No. Do you want to have your rant now? Scheduled rant.
There's some things about Mysterio that, and I've played it a bunch. I know a lot of people really like Mysterio, so I don't want to yuck their yum. But for me, Mysterio is one of those villains where there's just too much going on that I have to think about, and they didn't make a user interface for it simple. So the whole idea of like these illusion cards that come out as boosts that you then have to put in one of three different places on your deck based on who the villain is. doesn't which makes these solo champions games even more challenging because I'm like, oh man, I don't want to mess this up. But it doesn't matter as much in a casual game. But it's like this one thing they could have made it like if they'd foiled all of the illusion cards, or maybe they put just an extra boost icon down in the boost corner where you actually look. But it disrupts the flow of how you would normally kind of quickly play through the game. And so this extra thing that I have to remember, it's right up there with all of the techniques on Nebula. It's like, oh, these things have got to go off, or I've got to remember to pull out a card for the Infinity Gauntlet, or all of the nonsense that Venom Goblin does. So Mysterio just like that one thing kind of makes the flow of the game a little hard for me. And I wish there was more cards in the Mysterio deck that were like the Shifting Apparition or like the Deja Vu, where
Right.
I don't quite feel like I'm trapped in his Maze of Mirrors. I don't feel like he's trapping me. The Shifting Apparition's a really good example of like, oh, okay, this is a guard thing, so I can't do something and I have to deal with him, but I have to deal with him in a specific way. If I smash through this mirror, then I'm getting an encounter card. So like I like that, but there's not enough of that happening in the deck. There's too many kind of weird things that just put encounter cards in your deck, and extra encounter cards is just overwhelming. It's not that sense of trapped. So Mysterio kind of just kind of misses a little bit on the theme for me, and a little bit on that kind of mechanical too much to do that the villain needs me to do. And anytime I have to play that 10 encounter cards in a villain round, is like, why am I playing the villain so much and not getting to play my game as much? Which is the Venom Goblin does that as well. So yeah,
Yeah.
having said that, this is a amazing challenge for a final round. Like I'm trying the expert too. It's very difficult. I don't know if I'll stay here because I really did want to play Venom, but I am trying it out just to see what it's like and what it's doing. So it's a really good challenge for our final round. I don't I like that, but yeah, Mysterio as a villain is probably down in the bottom three or four for me, which is a shame because I'd like mostly like the Sinister Motives campaign, apart from. Yeah, he's fun to play against, but it's just a few things I wish you did a bit better.
I definitely agree with your criticism of it. I think it impacts my overall opinion of him as a villain less. Like I actually put him probably in the upper quarter of the villains. I just think it's pretty fun overall, but as you point out, it's definitely one that is super easy to miss stuff, and there's a lot of rules to keep track of.
Yeah, it's just a flow thing, I think. So anytime,
Yeah.
because the game has taught us a flow for the game, and you kind of like can quickly move through it, when something asks you to kind of detangle yourself from that flow, and the illusion thing is a really good example. It's like you're not, it's not, they could have incorporated it into the flow of the normal, like I reveal this card and I count up the boost icons and I look at the boost ability, and it's all in this one place I look. Illusion is not in the one place I look, it's in another place. And so you're asking me to look somewhere else, but you could have asked me to look in the same place, and then the mechanic would flow the same way. And I'm pretty tempted to just go and draw a little rainbow dot or something, or like down there just to remind me. And what I probably will do for this is slide some gold stars or something into my card sleeves, just so,
Now we're talking.
yeah, just so it's a reminder for me, because I know I'm gonna miss it otherwise. I haven't worried about it too much in my practice games, but when I get to the actual games, I'll definitely do something like that, because I've missed it even just playing multiplayer, and at least then you have someone else looking at it as well. Oh, that's an illusion card. Yeah, so it's a tricky little like niggly thing. I was like, damn, they could have just made that slightly better, and it wouldn't have been that hard. And foiled illusion cards would have been amazing.
That'd be very cool.
I don't know how to foil cards. I know people do that, but if I knew how to foil cards, I'd probably just go and foil all my illusion cards.
Oh, yes, well, rant over, Jarrett.
Yes.
I hear you. You're not wrong. You know, this is what folks who are currently engaging with it. I've been playing Rogue, and really, this is my first time really spending a lot of time with her. I've been enjoying that, so that's been fun, and I'm you know, looking forward to Con of Heroes in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Well, we'll get you to try to participate in some of the virtual things that are going on.
Oh, yeah, if they have some virtual things, I could.
Yep, there's some virtual events.
Yeah. Or I have one other thing.
Oh, please.
So I've been designing a board game for the last year.
Oh, yeah?
And it's going to GameFound in tomorrow.
Oh, just a little thing you wanted to mention?
So it will be on GameFound by the time this episode drops. But, yeah.
Do you want to send me the link and I'll throw it in the show notes?
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, it's a follow-up game to a game that I published a long time ago. So it's Endeavor Deep Sea, where you explore the ocean, a team of scientists, and kind of try and preserve and conserve the ocean. I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes, the campaign. Our publishers have done a lot of really awesome marketing, and the game looks amazing. So the visuals of it are really like they captured what I wanted. My friend and I designed this game. We've been working on it for a year and working with the publishers. It's pretty exciting. I'll send the link once it goes live, and you can put it in the
Very, very cool. And congratulations to you getting it to that stage. I know from some of my friends that are designers, that's no small effort. So that's amazing news.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun kind of sideline to my normal job, which is also designing games, which kind of came out of designing board games. So
everywhere you look, and when you're hanging out with your daughter.
Yeah. That's right. And she said when she was 3 or 4 that she wanted to be a doctor, and I think that she should stick with that plan. But I feel like she might have too much artistic creativity in her because of all of the activities that she enjoys. So we'll see what she becomes.
Well, thanks for sharing your news. And we'll throw a link in the show notes. And thank you again, Jarrett, for joining us this week. And thanks to you, listeners, for joining us on the Road to Nowhere.
Thank you.